of the day, everyone who's not in the loop on that. Thank you, Mark. Welcome. So happy to be having this holiday version of Global Trends. Listen, why don't we just, before we get started, just take a minute and throw in the chat something that you love about the holidays or the holiday season. We'll just make it a really quick check-in. I'll put mine first. Being with family. I asked this question on a call earlier this week, and somebody pointed out that the lights are so nice as we get shorter days. And it really changed my perspective on the whole light situation. Time to catch up, being with family, all the lights. Yeah. Okay, Cookie Monster, we're there with your blue shirt on. Great. Good. So that gets us in the holiday spirit. So, what I thought we would do today and the quality time with family. Yeah. What I thought we would do today is I will give a quick, I'm not going to read through the whole summary, but I'll give a quick summary of the articles, probably with some editorial comments by me, but I'll try to keep them to a minimum. And then we'll talk about the one that you all found most useful and the one that maybe brought some tension into the space for you. And then maybe we'll even be able to identify a theme if we can. All right, so five articles. The first one was about five pillars for democratizing data at your organization. And this was about how to motivate and empower regular people, so non-data people, to be able to use to be able to use data. So either through self-service or community, but be able to leverage data. And if you've had the experience of having to request a report, then you know the pain. Second article was about how networks actually harm organizations. And the author introduced the term network agency theory, suggesting that maybe this emphasis on networking in your organization and outside your organization is actually more individually optimized than organizationally and hurting the overall organization. And he talks about some ways that that might be the case and how to prevent it. Third article is Beyond Restructuring, Eight Alternatives to Reorganizing Your People. So this article, what I took from it, my editorial comment here is it was don't let reorganizing or reorgs replace good management. So it was like, look to good management first before you jump to a reorg. That's sort of my summary of that article. Next one was navigating complex interpersonal relationships, co-creating deliberate workplace connection. So there was a lot here about creating the we and the like how to make some agreements with the people you work with around so that you can have agency or individuals can have agency and teams can have what collaboration and consent and create the boundaries to operate effectively. So there were a lot of models in there about how to create a humanistic workplace through agreements. And then the last article was Org Design in 5 Minutes. And this was really focused on scope, dependencies, and span of control and how first line managers can organize their own teams, like sort of in the small, in the micro, at the team level. All right, that's my summary. Any questions there? I went through it pretty quickly with some editorial comments. Okay, maybe we'll throw it out there for which one you found most useful. Tanya, can you poll us, please? Hey, Tanya, how are the racehorses doing? Staying with our equine theme.
A pretty good split with one easing out into the front. Six of you have voted, so I'll give you one. Go. Oh no, now it's neck and neck. We got a tie. Can we get one more person to vote? Or maybe you just have multiple conversations to have on. Here we go.
So I see Jill saying she didn't read any, and I know Richard, you mentioned you didn't read them either, and that's totally fine. Feel free to join in the conversation because sometimes it doesn't stick that closely to the article. So we'll see how it goes. And Carol, same. Okay, what do we have? Okay, so we have a tie between networks harming organizations and restructuring. Okay, let me just make a note. And we can talk about both of them. That's totally fine. We have a whole hour. Well, let's start with how, and oh, by the way, we'll use the hand raise function here under reactions, right? So that we can have some order, but it's a pretty small group today. So if we end up just jumping in, that's okay too. All right. So what was useful about the How Networks Harm Organizations article? Anybody want to start? And well, I know that several of you didn't have a chance to read it, so let me just remind you what it's about, and maybe you'll have an opinion even without reading it. That's okay. The article was saying there's a big emphasis on networking inside and outside the organization that's creating individual prioritizing individual goals over the goals of the organization. And he talked about some things with where people were so busy networking that they couldn't really have time to get their work done. And the study showed that quality dropped. So I'm actually curious if anyone has, even if you haven't read the article, like, have you seen an overemphasis on networking? Okay, Jody, get us started.
Hey everyone, it's good to see you all. So I voted for this article. I didn't really connect to the title that, that networks harm organizations, but I enjoyed reading it when it got into more the, my takeaway was more like the type of networking is really important. And what resonated for me was this big emphasis on use tools. Networking is really important. So connect with as many people as you possibly can. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but the fact that networking, if you just focus on quantity and not quality, then it might be effective. And that there are some valuable nuances around, I guess, even saying being good at networking and using networks in a way that is effective and having a, I guess having a purpose for networking is very important. So those were some of the things I thought that's really worth thinking more deeply about.
But thank you, Jody. I wonder though about I wondered when I was reading that, like, use w networks to do your work, if that was flying in the face of some of the things we learned about innovation and spontaneous or serendipitous contact. I don't know. Others, what experience, well, if you haven't, even if you didn't look at the article, what experiences have you had with networking and its impact on your work?
Hi, everybody. I didn't read the article, but just hearing about the conversation and just scanning quickly through it, it just made me think about the difference from between using email and using social networks to consume information. At least in my last two companies, we used something similar to social media to pull information rather than the email, that is the more traditional way. And with email, you don't really network. Well, at least I think it's more limited than with social media. So I guess I don't know. I don't know those of you who read the article. I don't know if it's more because the harm that it causes is like it pulls you in many directions or the distraction. I don't know. It's counterintuitive.
He did talk about that. So he talks about it creating too many weak ties and not enough strong ties. And that he and someone else jump in here. He talked about digital networking as being like, I don't know if it was overwhelming or it was just like creating like a plethora of weak ties that were hard to ever follow up on. Okay, I see some hands up. So maybe you can jump in and correct me where I'm wrong there. So Shelley, why don't you go first and then we'll go to you, Jill.
Thanks, and thanks for the opportunity to join. I'm new to the group and I have not read the article. I do, however, work in an organization that is incredibly focused on networking. It is an integral part of our culture. And it's tied, I think, when I'm thinking about the benefits of networking, it's very much tied to this strong rotational culture. So there is an expectation in my organization, and we're a global organization, that you rotate positions about every 18 to 24 months. And our senior leaders and C-suite leaders are rotating almost every 3 years. So tied to that, you have this deep sense of networking that drives our crew engagement, our employee engagement groups and employee resource groups, that drives this sense of networking that literally opens doors for you when you want to rotate into another organization. I've never been a part of an organization that is so open to people moving through the lines of business. So you may go from a corporate function this rotation to a business-facing function in the next rotation. It is your ability to network and build relationships that opens the doors and allows you to move throughout the organization to get to those positions. But then also, I think it's going to help you long term in building the connections. So you actually understand what happened a year out after you rotate. So whatever you did in that position, it's your network that helps you stay connected to the changes that you made, the impact that you made, and what you can learn and grow into the future. So I see a ton of benefit just in my space and what I've been able to do in the organization and the moves that I've made. However, when you're new coming from outside the organization, it's very difficult to change that mindset of getting into networking. And you literally have to rely on the network of people who hired you to open the door to build that network across the organization. So it's counterintuitive to many new in the organization to network and to literally spend time and carve time into your calendar for coffee chats just to talk, but it drives the connection, it drives your career pathing. So that's how I've seen it applied. I've never worked someplace where it's so ingrained in the culture as where I am right now.
Thank you for sharing that. That's interesting. I will say he does note in the article about including the networking sort of guidelines or whatever of the organization in the hiring process. That's one thing he talks about. So that sounds like that would fit there. Okay, Jill.
I think the challenge for us, as well as I could imagine for other organizations, and I think I heard the theme a few times, is the purposeful networking, right? Like, how do you make the connections, the right connections, either to accelerate the work, right? Because people aren't working collaboratively with each other, or to accelerate careers, right? Connecting to the right people to open the doors. And, you know, what I've seen us do, as well as would be curious if others do, is, you know, use some of the technology to do these coffee chats, accelerate it, but it's a little bit more random. And especially when people in organizations are so capacity is not, you know, high, then it kind of, you know, people are doing this networking, but they're not seeing any results, or leaders aren't seeing any results in it either. And there is an aspect of social, you know, connections that are really important, but we need to be focused on the other connections as well.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you, Jill. Doug, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I did not read the article, so I'm in the same boat, but the notion of networking or networks is something that I guess need to look at two levels. Anytime I've been involved with leadership development programs, either for a client or through university executive education programs, one of the biggest takeaways that many of the participants point to is their ability to have met a variety of people from functions and geographies that they would not otherwise have met, and to create, in some sense, community, a larger community. Some of those communities continue to stay connected, others not so much, but the networking in that case serves a variety of purposes, knowing who they can turn to for information, getting questions answered about different internal issues, or even in some cases, just having kind of people in-house that they can use as sounding boards. So that can all be useful. I mean, it's, as somebody said, if it's more around some of the kind of like almost artificially created connections, that doesn't seem to have the same kind of value. Now, of course, it's like everything else in organizations. If the organization has been effectively managed, then people are pretty much all on the same page in terms of purpose, vision, those sorts of things, i.e. good management again, then they're much more inclined to use these networking, internal networking possibilities to further the strategic aspirations. The other part, though, is networking beyond, and the fact that we are increasingly in, if we start looking at organizations, in some ways, the kind of fixed, tight, bounded organization is a dated concept. You know, now business ecosystems become a very popular term. Well, that essentially is just about, it's a fancier term for kind of networked approach to value creation, right? And so, you know, fostering those kinds of network links, being able to reach out, and especially now AI is going to kind of facilitate this in dramatic ways in terms of knowledge advancement, which most, more and more companies are basically knowledge workers, then being able to source knowledge from anywhere, everywhere is a huge asset, mm-hmm. right? And if we start looking at these less formal, less legal, contractual network connections, all right, more and more of that is how knowledge workers are increasingly doing their work. So just a couple thoughts.
Thank you for that, Doug. And I think that's amazing that you've actually designed networks. I don't know if others have, but that's something I've not done. So you've actually thought about this. Richard, I see your hand up.
It is. And Doug, I really appreciate that contribution. That's very insightful and from experience, clearly. The only addition I would offer is my experience over the last 10 to 15 years is, yeah, ecosystems is a fancy word, but it actually represents a change in the way the world works. Because of the interconnectivity, we no longer can even stay in our own silo. Even if we want to, which we did before, we can't stay in our own silos. And so people in an organization find themselves as part of an ecosystem. And it's a term that I think has been elevated to really reflect that it's a different environment now than it used to be. But other brilliant contribution. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So in the article, he did say, because of the external network, that sometimes it was really hard to have a meeting because everybody was out somewhere. All right. Anything else from the networking article? Of course. Yeah. Please.
Piggyback on Richard's comment. People talk about designing ecosystems, right? And it has become very, very popular. I remember one of my business partners probably 5 or 6 years ago said, well, this is just a buzzword. It doesn't have any substance. And now, of course, it's like blown up, right? But Richard's absolutely right. Increasingly recognized degree of interdependence of organizations, of individuals, of across multiple sectors and multiple actors requires that as part of strategy and certainly as part of operating model design, which is, you know, a proxy for organizational design, we need to be thinking about, and you don't design the network, I mean, the ecosystem exists, right? But you do design the key players in the network that you want to work with to deliver value. And so some colleagues and I have been going back in sort of the history of the Tavistock. So we come out of the, you know, sort of heavy emphasis on socio-technical, but the Tavistock didn't limit it just to looking at work groups and task. They actually, you know, Trist's three-volume set that was kind of his last major work included the socio-psychological, which is all of the kind of the internal dynamics, group dynamics, power, all that whole huge important ball of wax, socio-technical, which is the work group connection with their task environment, but also the socio-ecological. And all three of those lenses and perspectives are really critical to being able to kind of create a dynamic design that is fit for our current incredibly tumultuous operating environments. So anyhow, that was it. And I don't know how to take my hand down. I'm not sure why.
I was going
to
ask you, it should be where you put it up.
What's that?
Under reactions where you raised your hand, I think there's a thing that says,
I got it.
Oh, Tanya did it.
Thanks. Well, that was the first time I've ever used it. So I'm learning a bunch of things. Thank you.
Now you've got it. Thank you. Shelley, I see your comment about considering the ability to discern and nurture a network as a core capability. That's an interesting concept too, I think. Do you want to say any more about that? I'm putting you on the spot.
It really resonated with me what Richard was saying around the need as you think about the ability to be successful today and into the future. We can't continue to be isolated and feel like we can find the answers and do things by ourselves. It's so almost outdated that for us to be successful. And I think to your point earlier, again, I didn't read the article, but this idea that are you fostering networks that are adding value? Are you fostering networks with the right people to generate the right value and the right purpose? So it's dual. It's one thing to be able to nurture a network, but if the network isn't adding value, how are you discerning what are the right places to be networked? How do you build those connections and how do you maintain? Falling short on either one of those, I think, is going to, it's just going to be debilitating in the future. So yeah, it's a result of all of this conversation.
Yeah, it's a really good observation. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mark.
Yeah, I'll chime in here too. I'm trying to think back to the article and it talked about the harm of networks, but what I'm hearing is mostly the positive and the goodness and the potential of networks here, which I would agree in for the most part. I'm trying to think of their points, and I think it was not having conscious awareness of what these networks as mechanisms are doing, right? And if you're not doing that, then you can have maybe too many networks and people are pulled in different directions. And it's just, you can run into some of the old problems you had even before you had all the technology, such as, you know, someone who's really good at that, leveraging their hub kind of ability to pull things together, they can have more power control. And I think that was another negative perhaps, but overall, I've loved this conversation. I think there's so much goodness with networks. It's just a little, you know, unknown or unconscious, you can get in trouble.
Well, you know, so he talked about hubs as bottlenecks, and he also talked about just too much networking that takes up and then not being able to follow through on some of your commitments within your network because it's just too much. But, you know, it's interesting. I think most of us on this call probably end up having very wide networks just because of the nature of the work we do. Like, I feel like I can almost be new to an organization and know more people than other people who work there because it just touches everything. Like, just the nature of the job is very broad. So, and that's an advantage in this work. But I don't, you know, there are other kinds of work that people do. But I wonder how, if anyone has that feeling, like about the nature of our job, you know, being a network generator, like we are a hub, our work is a hub. You can't help it. I used to think it was my personality, but then I realized it was just the nature of the work. Okay. Anything else, reactions or comments about networks, the harm, the good of a network?
I have a reaction to your comment. I second that. Some jobs need more the network than others. I'm thinking of a program manager, for example. The network is so much needed, right, to advance your programs. In my case, it's something similar. It's so needed. And I think the bigger the company, the more needed the network is, because usually you work in a matrix organization, and in matrix organizations, you have a big network, and the bigger the network is, the easier it is to know the right person or be connected to the right person who is going to help you advance your work. And that I'm struggling with the names of the companies that the article is mentioning, like big tech, where matrix organizations would be really common. And I'm struggling to find the harm and the negatives. And I haven't heard many negatives from this conversation either.
I mean, that's just the...
If they are weak, like the article mentions, I think they are weak because of the amount of people you work with, but they are still helpful in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Jody.
Just building on Jardina, your comment, and then Lillian's reaction to it. And it does make me think, I think the having a lot of connections, which resonates for me, I agree, in part of our work, you get connected to a lot of people. But for me, the downside is that stops you from getting a deeper connection, which you might need sometimes, right? So if I work with an organization and then I connect with 60 people as part of that project, but with maybe only one or two of them, or maybe none of them, do I actually create a connection that I might need later?
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be a trade-off between having lots of weak ties and a small number of deep connections.
Yeah. I wonder if any of you who were at the conference this past year remember, there was a speaker that talked about weak ties. I don't remember if... Well, Richard, your hand's up, so maybe you remember. You were there.
No, I have held my hand up before that because I have a close colleague who is an incredibly successful executive coach. He's working with a couple of Fortune 500 companies, and I am in awe sometimes of his networking. I was very proud when I hit 500 LinkedIn connections, and he said, "Yeah, that well done. Keep on going. I have 2,500." But he explained to me, he's published a number of books. He explained to me how networking works. He said, 2,500 connections. I probably have interactions with maybe 500 of them ever. The rest of them are just out there. But what happens is I have that, it used to be a Rolodex back when I was young, but it's that directory of when something comes up and I need a partner or some advice, or I know where to go. I've got categories of people and I've interacted with them in some way. I know who they are. And he said, you're right. Those LinkedIn connections are very shallow, you know, broad, shallow, but they keep people in my presence that I can have deeper relationships when it's called for. And I that's not the way I think. I'm not the kind of marketing person he is, but I thought that was very, a very different perspective.
That's very insightful. Thank you, Richard. And that is what it was. Now that you reminded me, that was the conversation at the conference was during the pandemic, we lost the power of the weak ties. We kept our strong ties, but we lost the power of the weak tie. And it was for that reason, right? You lose that sort of extra extraneous network. Great. Thank you. Well, maybe we can move on and chat about the other article that was tied for first place about eight alternatives to reorganizing your people beyond restructuring. So I know folks, not everyone had a chance to read this, so I'll just remind you. My takeaway from that article was don't let reorgs replace good management. But he talked about eight things. So he said, before you jump to a restructure, think about, here's the eight, I'll list them for you. Diagnosing underlying issues, exploring agile and incremental approaches, tackling dysfunctional behavior, reviewing non-essential projects, and involving employees in decision making. Well, that might not have been eight, but that's what's listed here. So he talked about, keeping teams together, which is kind of an agile thing, like keeping teams together and letting work go to the teams instead of continually restructuring people around work. And that was kind of the gist of it. So maybe someone wants to jump in and start with why they picked this article as the most useful. I know some of you picked it because it was tied. Nothing. Well, maybe we can talk about what, let's see, what is it? Sort of your views on people jumping to a restructure. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, it was, it wasn't a lot of depth to the article, but it was a pretty easy read. But still, I think it had some good points, and maybe we all kind of know it and think it. But just a good reminder that, a restructure is a really big hammer to swing, and there's a lot of implications with that that you're still going to have to consider with other parts of the operating model to make it effective. So, just being really conscious of what you're taking on when you're doing that kind of a change versus the other components in the system, so to speak. So that's what I really liked about it. Simple point, but I thought it was a good reminder.
Yeah, good point. A blunt instrument, as one of my clients always says. Okay, Doug, how about you? I think you're on mute. Oh, Doug, you're on mute.
Henry Mintzberg recently did a webinar. And in part, it was connected with his republishing his book on understanding organizations. And then he adds in this like recent title, finally, after 40 plus years. And one of the comments he made that I thought was just so interesting and humorous, but sadly so, is like the reason that executives turn to corporate reorganizations so frequently is because it's easy work. Right. And then I mentioned that in a workshop last week, and one of the participants said he'd come from a company that in the previous 5 or 7 or I don't know, maybe 10 years, it still would be outrageous. He had suffered through 16 reorgs. Right, because without thoughtful approach and in many cases really good consulting advice, they just move boxes around, and it's largely the result of not really wanting to do the hard work of providing good and effective leadership to the enterprise. So I thought Mintzberg's observation was pretty much on the mark to use somebody's trademark company name, but
We hear
anyhow.
you. Yeah. Well, I think that's a really good point. So we do the easy thing, not the right thing. Right?
Right.
Yeah. Thoughts on that? Thoughts on these comments? Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, and I think depending upon, you know, what consultants you're working with, what I've seen recently in working with an organization is, you know, they're working with a few of the really big consultants, and the advice they were getting was pretty much the same, but it was kind of having them consider whether they want to be more decentralized or centralized, these big giant swings. And I think the advice was generally good, but what I didn't see was a way to deal with the range of the in-between center work that could be done across the organization. And so it seemed easy to make these really big swings one way or the other, depending upon, you know, let's say a new leader in a position to try to make a difference. And while there was some goodness in the recommendation, what I found was less effort to figure out how to do all the other things, to look at the nuances between the hybrid or federated, whatever word they wanted to use to describe the work. There was so much more in there than just making a big structural change that would emphasize centralized or decentralized. So doing all that work in between. So, you know, again, that's common thing we see, but I think that really jumped out to me in the last engagement I was in, to see the challenges the organization was facing with doing the hard work to deal with that, that was beyond structure.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if it was this article or the 5 minutes to org design article, but one of those they did talk about, like, there's always a trade-off. So there's always a weak side, strong side. Like, so if you shift it, you always have to account for what you're always giving something up that you now have to account for. So there's no magical, perfect org design, which I think people think there is. Like, we're going to do this and everything's going to be so sunny. Jody, I see your hand up.
Yeah. So first, when I read this article, I really was looking for what do they mean by restructuring? So my assumption is that they're talking about reducing headcount, right? So that's why they're talking about that, you know, restructuring means firing people or not. So now I'm curious what other people thought restructuring means in this article.
Oh, I didn't think that it meant that. What did other people think?
No, I thought it meant reorganizing people, like changing people from one team to another team. Yeah,
that's what I thought. I thought it was moving boxes around.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, maybe I have to read it again now in that light.
Well, but because it might be like code word in organizations, it's code word for reduce headcount. He didn't say that, but it might be people think.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because often you'll get people talking about, oh, we're restructuring, and everyone automatically reacts knee-jerk reaction. Oh, so is my job safe? Am I going to lose my job? Or maybe even is my job going to change? But yeah, so.
Oh, interesting.
Other thoughts?
Richard, what do you think?
I've been involved in more than I care to count, all the way from business units up to huge joint ventures companies. And my experience is it is a code word, but it's a different code word in every organization. So one company called me in because the leadership couldn't agree on how to divide up the different activities, and they wanted a referee. So restructuring meant, please help sort out our dysfunctional leadership team. Another company, and this was a organization of higher learning, a graduate school, called me in, and they said, we want to restructure. And I said, well, exactly what does that mean? Well, it means the finance department isn't doing their job. You need to help them reorganize their activities to become more effective. All the way to, you know, large company, Shell International, that literally restructured from 102 country companies to 5 centralized regions. But it's code, and you won't know what the code is until you ask.
Yeah. Okay, folks, I didn't realize that this call is only 45 minutes because I forgot. I haven't been on it in a while. So here we are. and I didn't give us time to come up with a theme. But if you want to quickly propose a theme in the chat of how you think that these five articles, I know many folks didn't have a chance to read them.
I don't think this is a 45-minute call. I think we usually plan on an hour.
We do? Oh, I'm looking at my invite and I only had 45 minutes. Can we keep talking then? Are other folks good? Okay.
I'm good, but I like the idea of starting to look at what are some of the broader themes that come out of this. And I tell you, one of the things that jumps out at me is how many of the things we're talking about here, relationships, networking, restructuring, they're the same words that we've used, you know, as Doug points out, same words or the same concepts we've used for years, but it's taking on a fresh look with artificial intelligence and the interconnectedness in today's world. So same words, in many cases, same concepts, but they start to mean something very different.
And I'm here. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Doug. Oh, how about we do Doug and then Mark?
I'll make it real quick. I think one of the themes that I'm hearing in both articles, and of course I'm biased as well, is just the absolute critical importance of effective leadership and management.
Yep, doesn't replace good management.
Yeah, love that, Doug, too. And I think just even the importance of words and what we mean by these things, I think whether it was the networking or the structure or just what really that entails or doesn't in the context is so important. Maybe with the way the world and how we work is changing plays into that as well. But I think just really being clear on what we mean by those things is a theme that's kind of jumping out to me.
Great. Shelley, how about you?
The word that came to mind is intentional, based on the conversation, intentional in your network and what you're trying to accomplish, intentional in your org structure and what you're trying to accomplish. And I think aligned to all of that as well, the leadership piece, as well as being really clear about what those words mean and very clear what the intention is.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll just jump in here because what came to mind for me sort of along those lines, Shelley, is not just because we have a great tool, that doesn't mean we have to overdo it. Because it was like warning against over-indexing on networking, over-indexing on reorging. Like, those are good tools, not too much sugar, okay? Anybody else? Themes that you saw? Well, we do have one more agenda item here, and that is the which article created tension for you. So Tanya, if you want to put that little poll up, we have a few minutes. We can maybe see if anything created tension. Oh, it's over here. Okay, let's see. And this is a good conversation even without everyone reading the articles, because I know it's holiday week, everyone's shopping, but maybe we have something that created tension. This one created tension for me. And we say tension, it's, we used to say, for those who are new, we used to say, which article did you dislike? And it's not really about critiquing it. It's about like, oh, because it made me like, it created friction for me. All right.
Time. I think this might be an obvious winner based on what y'all do for a living.
I think so too. Yes. Okay, so it was interesting though. There was a lot for the two articles that we had already discussed. So I think we probably covered what was frictiony in those. But the org design in 5 minutes. Okay, well, you're right, Tanya. It's probably obvious, but who wants to start?
I would, but it'll take more than 5 minutes.
I'll just say they had me at span of control.
Oh. Say more about that. I mean, I had a reaction to that too, but
of course the whole 5 minutes in there, oversimplifying things a bit, but I think there's a heavy emphasis on the span of controls, I think, is being a limiting factor and have that being a driving force in that, right? I think that really kind of made me go, really? There's a lot of different, you know, ways you can think about spans and whatnot. And I don't think I'd lead with that as my driving factor or main factor.
I had that reaction. And then also, it's a reality in some places.
Well, that was maybe it too. Personally, it's a reality of an organization that uses that very heavily as a big cut in analysis and report to drive some decisions. And so maybe there's a little personal bias there as well.
Well, I will share that this is my networking. I reached out to a couple of the authors because I do that. And I didn't reach out to this person, but I looked at him. I stalked him a little bit on LinkedIn. And so he's an engineering manager. So when I put that in context, and the article is really about, because we let frontline managers reorg their teams. So in that context of a first line manager reorging their team, and I reread the article through that lens, I was like, okay, I see where this is coming from now. All right, other comments on the org design in 5 minutes. Oh, this is the one where he talked about balancing the trade-offs, which we talked about before. Looking at my notes here. I didn't understand the comment. I'm sure this is probably why it created one of the friction comments for me was, org design is the art of fixing old problems by creating new ones. I was like, nobody's going to like that comment.
I think if I can jump in, then I think I like your angle, Jardina, of trying to understand where the article is coming from. And definitely, I think I talk to people a lot who are really worried about the span of control and scope and dependencies. Like, these are real questions that people are asking about. I think for me with this article, I just felt really afraid that some of the leaders that I work with who've got those questions in mind, they might read this article and it's a wasted opportunity that they didn't then have a chance to think about, well, how do you look at the whole picture and do a diagnosis? And how do you think about what's your strategy? What's your purpose? What's the work that needs to be done? And all those other things that we love to do in our work with org design. This just feels like someone might miss some really important key steps before they start to think about span of control.
Right. Well, so I have a provocative question for all of you then, because it's the two articles, right, about the don't jump to reorgs or restructures, and then this org design in 5 minutes. Do you think that any leader, manager in an organization should be able to reorg their team? Or do you think that that should be something that maybe they're not so much allowed to do? And I hate to say, I'm using the word allowed to be provocative. Or is that like harmful? Go ahead, Lillian. Or Jill, sorry.
I think it goes to the conversation we had initially, as well as the theme that keeps on coming up, right? The interconnectedness of work. And if, you know, people are designing within a small scope and there's so much interconnectedness, you know, I think that's where you're going to create more problems, that one line of, you know, design to fix, you know, problems and create others.
Not sure if Jardina's still there or if she had a glitch. So I'm gonna jump in with that. I think this is a really great challenge and question for us around how would we, you know, how would you provide guidance to a leader who wants to reorganize their team in 5 minutes, maybe not in 5 minutes, but at least in a digestible, understandable way, like where to start, what questions might you ask? And I feel like it's a challenge to provide that kind of valuable, understandable information for people. If anyone has resources that are good at doing that, I'd love to see them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I, a quick comment. I I've just in the last 6 months or so come across some of Carl Weick's work on organizations, making sense of the organization. And what's amazing with some of these authors is that how many years ago they wrote these books. But he talks about organizations as either architecture, fixed structure, or improvisation. And that the manager's role is asking the right questions of the team on an ongoing basis so that they're constantly redesigning their work to fit with the constantly changing environment within which they operate. So if we assume a static reality, yeah, you can sort of impose all of these notions. But if we want to get, you know, if we want to have people operating at their best, you look at Daniel Pink's stuff, they want some degree of autonomy. They want and responsible autonomy, not everything goes kind of autonomy. And so organizations need to be looking at much more of a dynamic designing process than something that is, as Carl Weick said in, I think, the 70s, fixed architecture. So, thought.
Thanks, Doug. It sounds like we lost Jardina for a moment. So, but if she doesn't come back, she doesn't get back in time, no problem. Happy to step in. Shelley, you've got your hand up. But even before you jump in, Carol, you wrote that you're working with a team that was allowed to reorganize. That sounds really interesting. Do you want to say a few things about that?
Okay, I can. Hi, everybody. Nice to be here. So I was thrown into a team that I'd been working on with culture. I'm in healthcare. So culture, decision making and things like that. And recently, last week, they had two factions who created the culture for the teams, right? So created the design for the teams. And they're like, please come in and tell us which one to use or let's discuss that. So they were actually creating the culture, but historically they haven't made decisions well. So it's been quite a challenge. And I've never seen that, any other organization do that before.
Sorry, I got kicked off, but I'm back.
Sorry well, for welcome back, Jardina.
Thank you. Apparently they're replacing my meter and decided to shut my power. Shelley, I see your hand is up.
Yeah. I'm going to steal a little bit from Doug's comments earlier. So allowing leaders to reorg, I think in my recent experience, especially, it goes back to if leaders can't articulate the strategy and the purpose of what it is they're trying to accomplish, they should not be reorganizing, right? So if you think about, we've talked about integrating this into leadership development and making sure leaders understand. We go back to the STAR model. Do you understand the strategy? Do you understand the system and how the parts are coming together? Do you understand the talent that you have? Are you maximizing that? As a leader, if you can't identify those pieces and make those connections, you probably aren't well positioned to be reorganizing your function. But I also think about leaders who we allow leaders to hire and create new positions. And that by the nature of creating a new position is essentially creating a new structure within your team. So when you have so many leaders with that flexibility and autonomy, without the skills and ability to think about the full system, I think that's part of where we start creating the chaos. So I would say it's the consultant. It depends. It depends on the leaders. It depends on the outcome they're going for.
Well, you know, I go back to what you said before, Shelley, like maybe understanding how to create an adaptable organization is a competency or a capability, right? Like we have some capability around doing this. It's not so haphazard as I've seen it very haphazardly. Every leader decides like how they feel like organizing. All right. Well, I think now we're really at the end of our time. Thank you all for joining. Tanya, maybe you want to say a few words at the end here, but before that, I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday and so grateful to have your presence on the call today.
Well, as always, Jardina, thank you for jumping in and helping to guide the conversation today. It sounded like you all were engaged and enjoyed the time together. This is going to be the last virtual offering we have for 2023. So we'll look forward to connecting with folks in the new year. We'll be hopefully have some really good information and content for the conference ready to share when we're back after January 2nd. And then we'll also be continuing with all these virtual sessions that we offer 2 to 3 to maybe 4 a month, depending on what we get to get lined up. So appreciate you all making your time. Have a safe holiday season, a good new year, and we'll see you in 2024.
Thank you, everybody.
Well.
Bye.